1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan, how are you today?
I'm terrific. Ken, how are you?
You're always terrific.
Always full of vim and vigor and enthusiasm. I'm fired up.
You're fired up and ready to go. That's good to hear.
And if you live in Ward 4 in Concord, you got an election today. Special election in Ward 4 in Concord. Get out to vote.
All right. What is up for grabs?
City Council.
Special election for City Council. Get out there and vote.
You should get out there and vote. Most important thing is to get out there and vote. You know, I have a specific candidate, Ken, Karen McNamara. But, you know, look, most important thing for folks is just get out there and vote Ward 4 in Concord City Council.
Exercise your constitutional privilege today.
Do it.
In Ward 4. Outstanding. That being said, let's welcome our guest today. And he is returning to Feldis and Kale, another one who has been brave enough to return. Attorney Mike Lewis. Mike, one of the state's top litigators. He's a shareholder at Rathjung and Pignatelli. He teaches commercial law at UNH and Vermont law as well, and was a homicide prosecutor at the New Hampshire Department of Justice from 2007 to 2013. And, Mike, we welcome you back to Feldis and Kale.
Thank you very much for having me, Ken and Dan. I hope you're both doing very well over there.
Well, thanks, Mike, and we have a lot to talk about. Just yesterday, it was released that in this litigation involving 300 potential victims, likely victims, of sex abuse at the Sununu Youth Services Center, that the state is actually defending against this, and arguing basically it's sort of like a blame the victim argument. Can you fill in, listeners, what is going on with this and what's going on with that argument?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the first thing I want to say, Dan, is that this is horrific. And if you're a lawyer or if you spent any amount of time in the public safety realm, as I did, I spent, you know, the formative years of my career as a public servant in New Hampshire, working at the New Hampshire Department of Justice, working on cases involving the most extreme violence that we saw during that period of time in New Hampshire. Your eyes are opened a little bit to the things that many people don't see in our state, because you have to walk through crime scenes, you have to interact with victims, you work with police who are even more on the front lines, and you see how much violence is possible even in a beautiful state like New Hampshire, and particularly as directed toward vulnerable populations. And the most vulnerable populations, I think, indisputably, are children. And in that subcategory of vulnerable population, the most vulnerable are children where everything else around them has failed in terms of the traditional protections for them. So, you know, you typically can... You, me, and Dan, we're all dads, and, you know, and we care deeply about our kids. And our kids are extraordinarily lucky because, you know, there are children who don't have that. They just don't. And they stand on their own as people. You know, they're not somehow derivative only of their parents. As we all know, our kids are their own people, and they are their own people starting from day one of their lives. And, Ken, you have older kids. And maybe even grandkids, but you know that your kids become even more their own people as they get older, and I've seen that too. But sometimes we forget that, and you know, and because kids can't vote, and because they don't have the same sort of voice that adults do, they're easily shunted to the side, and they're easily ignored in the political process. And so, anyway, the most vulnerable population is at the center of the problem that Dan has raised. The Sununu Center is a center that is meant to be a temporary stopping point for children who have really struggled in their early lives. And either it's a product of misbehavior or it's a product of other people's serious neglect or abuse of them. But they're not supposed to be warehoused in a state facility and subject to mistreatment, abuse, rape, assault by state officials. And yet, that is, I think it's hard to say that that has not happened here. And it's hard to say that because the Attorney General's office has initiated a criminal investigation and made arrests of people who committed serious crimes against children, and this includes children who are at the Sununu Center, not because they've done anything wrong, but because the state has failed them, their parents have failed them, and there needs to be a place for them that is supposed to be safe to sit for a short period of time while they wait for the state to facilitate some sort of more permanent, healthy placement for them. But what we're finding out through multiple lawsuits that have been filed in federal court and through a criminal investigation, that these children have been victimized in the most serious ways by the state over a long period of time, and that they're still being victimized. One of the lawsuits that was filed was filed by Disability Rights Center, New Hampshire Legal Assistance, and ACLU. Three organizations that, don't always speak, with the same perspective on things, but all have decided to join with another public interest law firm called Children's Rights to sue the state of New Hampshire because the state of New Hampshire has doubled, closing in on tripled the incarceration rates of youth who have not committed any crime or juvenile infraction at the Sununu Center. And so in this dangerous environment, we are putting more kids for longer periods of time at risk by warehousing them in congregate care, where the national average for congregate care is 31% for teens, and we're at 70%. In the meantime, the same institution is being investigated by the Criminal Division of the Attorney General's Office, and Governor Sununu said that he would blow the place up in an interview that that I'm looking at right now. That is from July 11th, 2021, the Union Leader interview. Governor blow up youth detention center.
Well, that's kind of odd considering that the governor and Senate President Chuck Morse, instead of shutting down the youth, the Sununu Center, they've extended the life of it beyond for over a year, beyond the next election cycle. And so what's that all about?
I think it's a problem of resources that goes back a long way. I mean, I think that it's a hurricane of issues regarding official misconduct here. What it's about is failing to be out in front of an issue and failing to manage it properly and then reverting to base political demagoguery instead of responsible management of a situation. No one believes we should blow up the Sununu Center. It's not a sophisticated or responsible way of talking about a very sensitive issue. Instead, what needs to happen is we need to build up alternative programs so that we're not having kids at this abusive place. And so blowing up a facility doesn't solve the problem. And it's not evidence of a proper managerial perspective regarding a crisis. And it is a crisis.
Absolutely. And so just getting back to the over 300 victims, teenagers were physically and sexually abused in this facility over decades, multiple lawsuits in federal court, a criminal investigation. I have two, I know Ken probably has some questions. I have two very specific questions. One is, we just saw in headlines yesterday that in the civil lawsuits against the state of New Hampshire, that the state of New Hampshire is actually arguing something called contributory negligence, which for listeners means basically that the victims here are somehow at fault. So it's like a blame the victim argument. Yeah. So can you talk about that?
And I don't know how it's possible. I just don't. I mean, that, and so what I'm happy to say about it is this. I think the public should be deeply concerned by this sort of posturing by the Attorney General's office. So the Attorney General's office is speaking out of both sides of its mouth, in my view. On the one hand, they're criminally prosecuting people at the facility. On the other hand, they're delivering defenses to those people by saying somehow the victims are to blame for what happened to them. So in what they would say are separate domains, which they're not able to synthesize, which they are able to synthesize, they're not doing it.
Well, I mean,
separate
that's the
domain. Yeah, in the criminal and the civil, they're in conflict with each other. They're defending an institution that they're also prosecuting, consistent with an investigation, and that is deeply troubling. It should be troubling to the public. Blaming the victims is entirely inconsistent with the profile of the Attorney General's office over the last, at least 50 years of its existence. Certainly, it's inconsistent with the many cases that I had as a homicide prosecutor, where we went forward with murder charges, and when I had to consistently hear, that the victim was somehow to blame for being stabbed to death or being shot, or and we fought through that because most of those claims were fatuous, and so what we've got here, though, is apparently another mismanagement situation with serious perspective issues, where one side of the Attorney General's office is not speaking to the other side, and is allowing the public to believe that victims, children at the time, who were in this abusive environment, are somehow themselves to be blamed for the terrible things that happened to them.
It's wild.
delivering to criminal defense attorneys arguments that that the state has put its imprimatur on that could exonerate abusers. Is there a way out of this?
Mike, we got to take a quick break, but if you can hang on.
Hold on, Mike. We'll be right back with you because it's a very serious issue that we're discussing here and a very intriguing one. And Mike Lewis is our guest. Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back to Feldes and Kale, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Chatting with attorney Mike Lewis today, and we have been discussing an issue that is, well, from the sound of it, very disturbing. The Attorney General's office in New Hampshire kind of implicating 300-plus alleged victims complicit in their own abuse. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way out of this. There are multiple ways out of this that, that require the Attorney General's office, the Attorney General, his deputy, and the supervising attorneys to think more creatively about a problem they should all acknowledge, because of the massive documentation of it, needs to be solved in non-traditional ways. So the first thing is, they need to create an alternative system for resolving the case with the 300 abusers. There needs to be some sort of mediation. They need to acknowledge fault on the state's part, and they need to find a way to enter into a consent decree that organizes a non-adversarial approach to victims of crime while in custody, while in the state's custody. It's just not healthy or good for the state to be on the other side of the V in litigation from victims of crime. It just isn't. But if they can't, then, you know, then, and this is something that I've, you know, tried to deliver to our congressional delegation, and I'm hoping that, you know, that we can see this happen. The federal government needs to be involved. We have a United States attorney in waiting to be appointed that could serve as a mediating role, if it's the right person, you know, to bring the federal enforcement apparatus to bear where there's a clear problem with the state enforcement apparatus. Now, a lot of people don't want to hear that. States' rights, states' rights. But the problem is, you know, states' rights isn't working. The system is conflicted, and there needs to be a third party that intervenes, and there are federal legal interests at stake, the rights of children. We know this because there's a federal lawsuit that is pending in front of Judge Barbadoro in the Federal District of New Hampshire that raised a series of federal claims under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that's just one of a series of claims that will be litigated, and he has indicated that that he's not very impressed with what the Attorney General's office is arguing in defense of its claim that, you know, 14 to 17 year old warehouse with mental illness issues who are the victims of abuse and neglect don't somehow have a series of rights that the Attorney General's office of state is resisting. You know, so, but I mean, really, like, there, I mean, this is where you start to talk about the competency of state government a little bit. And I hate to say it, but, you know, Governor Sununu appointed a 34-year-old with no trial experience, no experience inside the criminal justice system, who never tried a case before, and who came before the executive council and said that a land use litigation where there's no judge is somehow similar to a prosecution of violent crime in front of a jury. That is not the kind of person who, you know, who is going to have the perspective and the authority to solve this issue. And you know, it hasn't been solved. So, you know, and there's some sort of management problem at the Attorney General's office where, you know, the Deputy Attorney General is not playing a role in resolving this conflict. And the civil and criminal bureaus, separate bureaus, are not speaking to each other. And this has been a long-standing issue. It's not as if they can say, we're surprised. They're not surprised. They know this is percolated. They don't have the bandwidth, the creative energy, the ability and perspective, apparently, to solve the issue constructively. And instead, they're going after victims. And this headline is one of the most disturbing that I've read.
Yeah,
it comes in just a few days. I mean, if you pay attention to these issues, as I do, because I litigate in this area, both as a matter, you know, I've done a bunch of pro bono work in this area. I've done a bunch of high-intensity civil rights work. I have a case pending in the New Hampshire Supreme Court right now for a different population of children. You know, I've been against the Attorney General's office in these cases. I find their disposition shocking here. You know, they are not speaking in the interest of justice in New Hampshire, where there are obvious injustice problems, and they're supposed to be standing for vulnerable populations. Where is the Civil Rights Division of the Attorney General's office? Right? I mean, there was this vaunted, publicized Civil Rights Division of the New Hampshire Attorney General's office that was meant to demonstrate that the current state government cares about the civil rights of people. Where are they in this? I mean, you couldn't imagine a more broadly popular group of victims worthy of civil rights prosecution than children. I don't even know who the leader of the division is right now. He certainly or she has not come forward to somehow, you know, express him or herself publicly around these issues. And so, I mean, you're hearing from me, guys, you know, immense sadness around these issues. I'm a veteran of the Attorney General's office. I care deeply about this office. I work with people in the office, many of whom I love, you know, as former colleagues. And it's painful for me, like physically, psychologically, and emotionally painful for me to watch them not solve these issues. And, you know, and I think it's a major indicator of serious sickness in state government. and it runs all the way to the top.
Mike, is there any sort of precedent for this? Has this kind of thing happened in other states, or is it?
Yeah, it has.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, the answer is yes. Many states have dealt with huge problems in regard to protecting children who are the victims of abuse and neglect. And New Jersey, Michigan, Texas, all you got to do is, you know, pick up the phone and have a phone call with veterans of, you know, of these fights on both sides and you know, find a way to, you know, to come up with a creative solution. In New Hampshire, in prior iterations of New Hampshire state government, with other vulnerable populations, the state has been able to reach accord with, you know, with public interest and civil rights lawyers in the interest of vulnerable populations in order to set aside sick institutions and start in a more constructive way. We've seen this in, you know, we saw this in the 1970s and 80s around mental health provisions in the state. We've seen this to a certain extent in regard to deficits in the prison and jail population. We're not seeing it in situations involving kids. And that's bizarre. And you have to ask why. Why? And there's no good answer except incompetency and, you know, and a failure of perspective and a disconnect with the notion that the Department of Justice is supposed to be litigating and representing the people in the interest of justice.
Well, there's a couple issues here. Well, there's many issues here, but in terms of Department of Justice, just setting that aside for one second, and then talking about the broader issue about helping children, the last legislature, led by Democrats, put in place the recommendations and funded the recommendations of an independent audit of DCYF released in December of 2016, including doing a comprehensive children's system of care, including a statewide mobile crisis team, including child protection staffing that is necessary to adequately protect vulnerable children from abuse and neglect. A lot of that, Ken and Mike, wasn't stood up by this administration. And in fact, they proposed cutting a lot of it in the last budget and did, in fact, cut much of that, including staffing, child protection staffing, in this last budget. So we'll get back to the DOJ issue, Department of Justice issue, in just a second. But going to that issue, Mike, seeing this budget just pass that actually cuts child protection staffing and continues to not implement many of the programming that was put in place by the last legislature in response to these audits, what's your response to that budget that just passed?
So I think it's horrendous. And I don't understand it. So, I mean, here's what I hope we can all agree with. The United States is a free market-oriented society. And that means that when you're hiring people, in order to get good people to the, you know, to take on the best job, you need to make the jobs attractive in a competitive world, right? And you know, and I'm an employer. I'm a business person. So I, you know, when I have to go out and find talented people who I want to work on cases and matters for my clients and my law firm, I have to propose an attractive package to them if I want good people. We are not doing that in New Hampshire. Instead, you know, in these systems of response to child abuse and neglect, we are, you know, we are not recruiting in a way that makes us competitive with other jurisdictions. The Office of Child Advocate in New Hampshire, which was separately set up to perform oversight responsibilities in the aftermath of the crisis that's been acknowledged as a crisis in protecting children from child abuse and neglect in New Hampshire, said that, you know, that on the one hand, we need to staff up well beyond where we've been, you know, dozens and dozens of additional child protective service workers and nurses and other health care providers for children. And on the other hand, we pay people to take on these positions at salaries that are significantly lower than neighboring states and Vermont. And or I think it's about maybe it's about equal to Vermont, but it's lower than Massachusetts, lower than Maine. And so if you're out there and you have a master's in social work, or you have, you know, some sort of degree that, you know, that would give you the ability to respond to these incredibly complicated situations involving, you know, the dysfunction of the normal relationship between parents and children, or caregivers and children, where children are victimized, right? And you have to go in an opioid crisis, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, and respond to these situations. You want good people. You need to pump up your hiring processes, pay people more to attract them here. And if you don't, they're not going to come. And if they do come, they're going to leave very quickly to go work in a neighboring jurisdiction.
Yeah, and it's tough work, so, and people are doing their best.
It is very hard.
Yeah.
Well, no. See, the thing is, like, I'm not going to paint with a broad brush on this. Like, some people are doing their best. Some people are burned out. Some people are not going to stay forever. Like, I'm not in the ball game of, like, rah, 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 everybody's doing a good job. That is not true, okay? Like, some people are doing the best they can. Some people aren't. The point is, it's a terrible working environment, and if you want to maximize your ability to respond as an outcome matter to a really deeply problematic situation involving children who are abused and neglected, you need to revolutionize your approach. I mean, I'm sorry to use the word, but you really, I mean, like, we can't do the same thing over and over again. And the idea that, you know, that somehow you could call what I'm describing, you know, socialism, which it isn't, ignores the economics of the free market economics of failing to deal with this issue. So Governor Sununu and his administration will say, we're fiscally responsible. And I will say, that's only if you ignore the liability you're carrying for failing to deal with this issue on the front end at a lower cost. Because if you spend at a lower cost on the front end, you'll protect children and their interests. If you don't, you're going to face lawsuits that carry millions of dollars in liability, that have attorney's fees awards attached. And also, those are just the lawsuits. You're not going to be dealing with the public health and public safety aspects of, you know, of the results here, which, you know, create, you know, an underclass of people who are going to suffer in all sorts of ways when compared to, you know, people who are cared for as children in our society. And all of that is supported by, you know, a massive amount of statistical evidence that is easy to identify and provide.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Just shifting.
Bad management.
Just shifting, you know, to the headline, Mike, that I think many people in the Capital Region saw this morning above the fold in the Concord Monitor, back to the DOJ Department of Justice issue, where it is clear, again, that the Department of Justice is basically leveling a defense to the abuse suffered by likely over 300 kids.
I just don't see how, like, I mean, I'm interested to see them defending that position as a matter of law. I mean, say nothing of, you know, the blaming the victim's position, which they would otherwise reject. You know, I mean, blame the child victim who the state has, you know, has taken custody over, put in this terrible environment where they've suffered, you know, at the hands of state officials. Blame the victim for, you know, for the violence that the child suffered. Placing that aside, it's a matter of law. Like, you know, children are not typically competent. They don't have full agency. And so the idea that, like, a child is going to be engaging, if be able to engage in a sort of contributory negligence vis-a-vis, you know, the harm that they committed, is, I don't know that it's legally, it's going to fly. There's also the problem policy, it's a policy matter of what we call the Victim's Bill of Rights, as a matter of, you know, statutory law, and what that will say inside an environment where the state is also pursuing criminal penalties, you know, against the perpetrators. I don't know how that, you know, that allegation stands up. And I think, you know, I don't think the state believes it either. I think what's happening is the state is preserving its rights and acting like a private insurer instead of a justice ministry. And hoping that somehow maybe this will be settled at some point. They have to just preserve their rights. I've seen this before. I don't think it's the proper way to be a public enforcement or defense officer. I think that being at the New Hampshire Department of Justice means that you represent the people generally and justice, you know, generally, and you have to take a more nuanced view. And I think the view they're taking is protect the public fisc. But the public fisc is just one aspect of justice in New Hampshire. There are also legal mandates and civil rights that need to be protected as well with, you know, and while they're not, you know, they're not dollars, they also have tremendous value to people, and that is given very short shrift, I think, by the lawyers who are, you know, defending these cases.
Our guest today, attorney Mike Lewis, and Mike, do you want to touch on the unemployment insurance benefits?
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, it's funny.
Hold on one second, because we have to take a quick break, and then we'll get back to that. Okay.
Okay.
It's Feldes and Kale here at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, Feldes and Kale. We are brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Attorney Mike Lewis is our guest today, and before we have to wrap things up, Mike, on this program, where do we stand in terms of the unemployment insurance benefits litigation that you're also involved in?
So we ended up winning for our client. My client, Claude Pottier, was accused of having received benefits for unemployment that he didn't deserve, and so he was told by the state falsely that he owed the state thousands of dollars, and also that the state wasn't responsible for paying him benefits he was owed. And as you know, we filed a lawsuit in which we claimed that this was part of a general policy of essentially seeking income tax support from the most vulnerable group of adults in the employment population, by recouping to pay for the unemployment insurance fund money that was owed to them. And we know that this was part of a sort of a dragnet kind of policy that was implemented before Thanksgiving of last year by DES. And DES has since, as a result of our lawsuit, walked back its position, hopefully to the benefit of thousands of people. We feel like we accomplished something very substantial for people in New Hampshire through this lawsuit. And also for our clients, we litigated the case inside the Department of Employment Security, in tandem with the litigation in Superior Court. And while our case is still pending, the bureaucrats conceded that they'd been wrong and that our client, had been wrongly deprived of benefits, and also that he'd been wrongly accused of receiving benefits he wasn't owed. And, what I take away from this is part of the theme, which is, our government is not operating well, and bureaucrats are saying false things about ordinary people, including the most vulnerable people, because they think they can get away with it. Because they know that there just aren't a lot of people who, in a crisis, are going to be able to stand up to them. And that's really sad. I mean, it's not the way to treat people. And I get emails, guys, almost every day from people where this is happening to them. And I'm just one lawyer, and as much as it may seem like I'm, into the world of civil rights, I'm a business litigator at a business law firm. That's my portfolio. And so, people are not going to have access to the kind of, gladiator type you know, litigation fighting, because I'm just one person. I don't have a giant law firm. In every case, they're not going to have, you know, what I can deliver. And so the state, I think, is going to, if it's going to do right by people who are displaced by this pandemic, is going to have to really seriously, you know, work on itself and stop telling lies about people, stop making false statements about people, and, you know, and take a U-turn. But I don't think it's going to. I mean, the people, you know, I've heard the public statements by, you know, this bureaucracy have been almost entirely defensive, and, you know, and accusatory. I mean, it's bubble thinking, you know, that, somehow, you know, people who are struggling, who are never going to be able to get their minds around the, you know, the most bizarre Byzantine kind of bureaucracy are going to be able to navigate this, you know, without help and without sympathy. But people can't even get anyone on the line at the Department of Employment Security. That's, you know, the typical thing I hear is like, I call and call and call and call. I can't get anyone on the line. And why is that? It could be that, you know, that they're in a constant state of triage because we don't take seriously the legal responsibilities we have to people, because instead of being the ant, we're constantly the cricket in the Aesop fable about preparing for the winter.
Well, Mike, we appreciate you being with us as always. This is your second go around here, and we hope to have you back again in the not too distant future.
I really appreciate it, guys. I hope that the public is listening. I really appreciate what you're doing. I think it's a public service to, you know, to try to make sure that people understand what's happening in New Hampshire. We've all been shut in for a year, and so we've been kind of, you know, in a state of duck and cover a little bit. But we, you know, we're one of the greatest states in New Hampshire with one of the most publicly involved populations. We can do better. We can be more engaged, and particularly when it comes to people who really need us to step up for them, you know, we need to do better than what we've done.
Well, Mike, again, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Mike. Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. That's attorney Mike Lewis from Rath Young and Pignatelli, also teaches commercial law at UNH and Vermont Law. And this is Feldis and Kale. We are delighted to have you along with us at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are back, heading down the home stretch in this edition of Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan, looking ahead in our next edition of Feldis and Kale, we're going to be joined by former WMUR political director Scott Spradling.
Oh, great. Yeah, Scott is wonderful, and it'll be great to have him.
Yeah, so Scott will join us on our next edition of Feldis and Kale. If you're listening to the maiden voyage of this broadcast on July 13th, the All-Star Game is coming up tonight. Will you be watching, Dan?
Well, you know what? I'm going to be watching, Ken. I know you're not going to be.
No, I'll be watching.
You're going to watch it? I thought you were going to boycott it.
No, I'm boycotting the Olympics.
Okay.
You know, I know why you felt that way, because I was totally opposed and still am to the shifting of the All-Star Game to Denver by Commissioner Rob Manfred, stripping it away from Georgia for no good reason, in my opinion. But that being said, I cannot pull myself away from just the intrigue of having five Sox players there. But more than that, the Shohei Ohtani show, which is going to take place
tonight.
He's going
to bat leadoff and start pitching, too. Did you hear that?
Unprecedented. Yeah. I mean, we will never, I mean, unless it's him, we've never seen it before.
Never seen it.
And we will probably, except if it is Shohei Ohtani, we'll never see it again. So it's history in the making tonight, even though I will say that The All-Star Game is really just a glorified exhibition. I think it's lost a lot of its swagger over the years because of the fact that, you know, the big reason is interleague play. I mean, it used to be back in the old days when I started following baseball. I mean, the leagues never intertwined until the World Series.
Right.
But now you're seeing all the teams playing one another at least every other year or every 3 years, whatever the situation may be, depending on the teams. But the luster is kind of gone from it. It's not determining home field anymore. A lot of people were opposed to that as well.
And
a lot of the players are skipping the game. Some have legitimate excuses for it, but others do not. Like Mookie Betts, for example. I'm very upset with Mookie for skipping the All-Star game. He's still a relatively young player. He has been in All-Star games before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. It just bugs me that he can't, you know, it's a big showcase for Major League Baseball. It truly is. And we're not seeing Mookie Betts because of injury. We're not seeing Mike Trout. But I think really most of the focus is on Shohei Ohtani anyway, no matter what.
Yeah, definitely Ohtani. But, you know, in terms of the Red Sox, we've got five players in. They released lineups this morning. Ohtani's batting leadoff, but you also have Xander Bogaerts batting third, and Rafael Devers batting fifth.
You do.
And so good showing by the Red Sox in this All-Star game.
Yep, no doubt about it. And the thing of it is, when the lineups were first released, I was a little bit concerned that pitchers are only going to throw, I think, at the most one inning in this game. You know, each pitcher will throw one inning, if that. And I was concerned that if they had to take Ohtani out, and which they will after probably an inning of work, that he would not be able to hit anymore. But that's not the case. Not the case. He can stay in the lineup. Even though he's replaced on the mound, he can stay in as the DH.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but that does make sense.
Yeah. So
no, that's good. That's good. We'll get to see him the whole game. Well, much of the game.
Yeah, much of it. And we saw the home run derby last night. He was eliminated in the first round of that home run derby on Monday night by Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals. And that was a great battle. A great battle. Went to double overtime. And then Soto finally won. The last tiebreaker was taking three swings. And Soto connected on all three of his swings in the double overtime, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohtani was out on the first swing. So it was a fun home run derby. Pete Alonso won it again.
For the
second straight time. Not the second straight year, because they didn't have one last year, but he won it in 2019, and he won it this year. He's just a machine up there.
What do you have, like 35 in the first round?
Something like that. It was a record setting. Yeah, 34, 35. He's just a machine when he gets up there.
Yeah.
And he was up there dancing to music he picked out. And he was really something. It's great to see somebody have that kind of enthusiasm for the game of baseball. And a great story, too, with Trey Mancini coming back from a serious battle with cancer.
Yeah,
he made it to the finals Pete Alonso a good run in the finals of the Home Run Derby. But it was Alonso prevailing. But what a story Trey Mancini has been. What a comeback he has made with the Baltimore Orioles a year ago. I mean, even less than a year ago, people wondered if he would ever play baseball again.
That's right. And I don't know, Ken, if they still have it, but if they have comeback player of the year, I mean, he's got to be it.
He's won it. He's clinched that. I don't think there's any doubt about it. That'll go to Trey Mancini for sure of the Baltimore Orioles. So the All-Star game coming up on Tuesday evening. The Olympics coming up in just a short time. They're even talking about now redesigning the American flag, folks. So if I didn't have enough reason to boycott the Olympics before, I certainly do now. Talking about redesigning the American flag for their logo when they hit Beijing next year for the Winter Olympics. So at any rate, Dan Feldis, always a pleasure to be with you.
You as well, Ken.
And our program is proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion, and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. See you next time right here on Feldis and Kale.